We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning and welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. And we're very pleased to have here back again on the program Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Every month, she stops by and takes questions on things that grow in the home landscape. And maybe you are thinking about what you'd like to be planting this year. You have some sort of problem left over from last season, whatever is on your mind. We can talk about houseplants, all that kind of thing. We do that on a regular basis here on the show when Sandy stops by. Also, we have a special guest this morning joining us by telephone, Joe Lample. He's a gardening expert. He is, among other things, the host of a show called Fresh from the Garden that airs on the DIY network. He, in fact, hosts two national gardening shows. He writes a weekly syndicated column and does a lot of interviews, makes live appearances, has books and articles, has a blog, has a website. And he's joining us by telephone to talk. And part of the reason that he's here is it gives us an opportunity, gives Sandy an opportunity to talk about Garden Day, which is coming up later this month for folks here in and around central Illinois. So we'll talk about that. And whatever questions people have between these two guys, if they can't answer them, nobody can. Glad to have you here once again.
Thank you.
Last time Sandy was on the show, actually, we had a blizzard and she was snowed in at home, so she didn't even get here. We did it by telephone. And speaking of telephone here, Joe Lample is with us. Joe, hello.
Hello.
Hey, thanks very much for talking with us.
My pleasure. Glad to be part of the show today.
Well, I don't know what, maybe Sandy, do you just want to start out right and talk just a little bit about the Garden Day?
Yeah, we're having our Garden Day 2010, and it's Spring into Gardening. And it's actually 2 days, Friday, March 26th, and Saturday, March 27th. The Friday, March 26th is we're going to be with Kai Zatarani, who's with Parkland College, and we're talking about landscape design, art in the garden, how many gnomes is enough, that's what we like to say. So that was more landscape design. And then the second day on March 27th, we're going to have any number of speakers. Joe Lample is going to be one of our first speakers, and he's going to be talking about the five biggest mistakes people make in their landscape, which I'm sure I've made all five and then another five I could probably give after that. We also have Rosalind Creasy, who's going to be talking about edible landscaping. We have our very own Diane Nolan from WILL, Illinois Gardener, is going to be talking about native plants in the flower border. Dave Waniger is going to be talking about shrubs in a flower border. We don't always talk about that. And, of course, we have to have a little bit of food in there. So our local chef, Ben Lipchansky, is going to be talking about growing and cooking with spring vegetables. So that's going to be fun. And Janet Makunovich is going to be talking about landscape design. So there's lots of things going on. People can go to both days, one day. So we're really pleased to have Joe with us because I'm really excited to hear what those five biggest mistakes are. And I'd be very surprised if I haven't made them all.
Uh-huh.
So
well, no, we don't want to have
we don't want to give it away.
We give it away here,
everything,
but I better ask Joe. Tell me one. One is what is one of the that would be on your list of the five biggest mistakes people make in landscape.
Can I tell you the sixth one that doesn't make it on the list?
Yes, do.
That way I can tell you one of my pet peeves, and at the
okay.
same time I don't give away anything.
Yeah.
We'll talk about anything you want. But I don't know how pervasive it is where you live, but all around the Southeast, tree topping seems to be something that you can't go very far without seeing it. And when I talk about tree topping, it's that wonderful hardwood tree in the front yard or the backyard even that has been completely coat racked or pollard or chopped off. And so you have this naked tree with these wonderful branches reaching to the sky that have just been completely denuded. And it's a hideous sight. And the thing that gets me is that people don't realize not only is it hideous, but it's killing the tree. And it's very common in certain parts of the country, like in the Northwest and the Seattle area and the Southeast it is. I don't know about there, but anyway, it's awful. It's killing their trees. They don't realize it, and invariably they all die.
Yeah, we're getting better, I think, in this area. I think it used to be years ago, it used to be more prevalent. So we're getting better, but I do still see it. Mm. And unfortunately, as you know, once they've been topped, you really can't get that back. You can't get that natural shape back. It's kind of like that's it. You're kind of stuck.
Yeah, and the problem is when these new branches, because trees, you know, they there's a hormone in them that suppresses vertical growth until they've been lopped off from their branch, and now this hormone kicks in and says, "Ooh, I need to resprout because I need to produce leaves to photosynthesize to provide food." And so they try to really shoot up, and so you have these water spouts that come up and these thin branches that don't have the same connectivity to the parent plant that the other one did, and so they're weaker, thereby making it more dangerous, and it's a never-ending process. Once you top it once, you have to kind of keep doing it.
This sort of mystifies me. I guess I don't. Why would somebody do this? I mean, what would be the ostensible reason for
doing
that?
That is the million-dollar question. I scratch my head and say the same thing. Why? See, here's what I envision. I see the tree cutting guy walking up to the front yard and said, "Mr. Smith, it's time to top your trees again." And Mr. Smith says, "Well, if you think it is, it must be that time." But I don't know that anyone ever asked the question, well, why do I need to top that tree? Because the tree topping guy doesn't probably have a very good answer, or at least a truthful answer. Let's put it that way. Now, there's probably two exceptions. One is that we are, and now this will kind of give away one of the five biggest mistakes, we don't really pay attention to that plant tag that comes with the tree or the shrub or even the perennial to tell us how tall and wide it gets and how quickly it grows. And so many times we want that instant gratification. So we put that Leland cypress underneath a power line because we want to screen our yard from the road, not realizing that tree is going to get about 80 feet tall in 5 years. And so lo and behold, in the second year, somebody has to come along and top it or else take the tree down. So instead they top it. So that would be one reason. And the other reason, I think, is for people that might want a cheap source of firewood. Seriously, they've got it right there. They think, well, there's a tree right there. I think I'll cut that.
And I'm sure that that's not to, I'm sure that their trees can benefit from, let us say, aesthetic pruning.
Yes.
But that's a whole different thing from what
we're talking
about.
And that's a very good point. They do benefit from aesthetic pruning, but it's night and day difference in how you do it. You don't just come across with a chainsaw and completely cut them all off at the same level without any thought to it. Aesthetic pruning looks at the crossing branches, the interior branches, the dead and dying branches, and the branches competing with others. And those are the ones that we remove. And we only do so by about a third of the entire plant, worst case scenario. And that's actually healthy for the plant. You're actually making that plant or tree better when you do that. But this is far from that.
Yeah, and actually, believe it or not, my grandpa, I remember he used to have his trees topped when I was a kid. And his thought was the trees were getting too big. And they were so close to the house.
Uh-huh.
His concern was the tree was too big. It's too close to my house. So his thinking was if you make it smaller, it makes my house safer. So I don't know how much of that is still going on, too.
Well, I'm sure that thinking is still out there. But the problem is, and see, this is the problem. This is misinformation because the first assumption is, uh-oh, the tree is getting big. I need to cut it back and top it. Well, what they don't understand is that tree is going to try to replace its height in one season. So that's why it sends up those branches that are very fast to grow, but they're very weak. But that tree is trying to get back because it has a certain root mass. It's trying to get back to the size that it was before it got topped. But it can't generate the mass of wood that was removed. But it can send out these skinny little branches that shoot up straight up into the sky that now equal the size of the tree that they just cut back, but worse, and this is where we get into the safety issue, because those branches don't have the same connectivity to the parent wood, they're weaker, and they're much more susceptible to storm and wind damage and therefore falling on your house or on somebody else. So it's actually worse to cut it like that.
All right. Well, let me just very quickly reintroduce our guest here. Joining us on the phone this morning is Joe Lample. He's a gardening expert, gardening educator. He does a lot of radio interviews, does live appearances in addition to writing books and articles, has a blog, has a website. He is host of the program Fresh from the Garden on the DIY Network, and he will be here in our area a little bit later in the month for the spring garden day for 2010, and this is March Saturday, March 27th. It's Friday the 26th. The thing is a two-day event. It's 26th and the 27th, and then Joe is going to be here on the Saturday. And also here in the studio with me is Sandy Mason. She's with us once a month on a Tuesday. We talk about lawn and garden care. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Questions are welcome here, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And I do have something, actually, we got, and I should mention, email will-talk@illinois.edu, and I have one here, and it's a tree question. So let's see what you got to say about this. We have someone who writes in and says that he has a red oak. It's been in the ground for 3 years. It was 2 years when they bought it. It was about 8 to 9 feet tall. And the person says, should I be pruning lower growth to stimulate upper growth? When should I do this, and how far up the trunk should I be pruning?
I would lower growth doesn't necessarily stimulate upper growth. It will stimulate growth near where the cut was made, first of all. So if you think that you're going to get upper growth by cutting... Now, this depends on how far away the top is from the part that you cut, but typically when you make a cut, the hormone most affected is the area nearest the cut, and that's where it's going to send out new growth. So you may just be creating a labor problem by cutting low because you're going to have to come back and continue to do that. Now, having said that, I would cut the canopy or limb the tree up for two reasons. One would be aesthetics. Two would be to allow more light to the ground. Sometimes people are trying to grow grass, under oak trees or something else that needs a little more sun. And short of removing the tree, one thing that they can do is they can limb it up. And again, how far do you limb it up? Well, as far as you need to achieve the aesthetic look that you need and to get the light down to the ground if that's one of your objectives. But beyond that, no higher than that if you can avoid it. And then again... cutting it low doesn't necessarily stimulate top growth.
And I think, too, sometimes young trees, especially oak trees and stuff, and maybe Joe will agree with this, is oak trees and there's Kentucky coffee and there's any number of them, they just look like gangly teenagers when they're young. And I think people think they're going to look like a mature tree when they're young, and they don't. They have these individual branches, and you think, oh, I wish it was fuller, I wish it looked different, but that's just the way they are. They're gangly teenagers. Just realize as they age and as they get bigger, they're going to fill in more, and they won't have that sort of gangly look to them. And even, leaving some of those lower branches on isn't a huge deal if you're not, like, running into them or whatever. But eventually you could certainly go ahead and take those off, too.
Right.
So just to realize that some trees just look that way.
Right. Now, if they it sounds like this tree is small enough that they could probably do some aesthetic pruning up the tree a little bit. And it wouldn't be a bad idea to look at that tree. And, again, back to the statement I made a few minutes ago, a good justification for shaping that tree would be to make sure that if there's an inward-growing branch that you potentially remove that, or a crossing branch, or one that doesn't look as healthy, or one that's in direct competition with one nearby, well, then you would look at that and decide which branch you want to leave, and you would remove the other one. And by so doing, you are going to get some increased growth, again, where you made the cut, and assuming it's up the tree some, you'll get some more growth. But it's also healthy for the tree because you're really you're shaping it now. You're setting its future course now for how you really want that to look later on. So keep an eye on that, and that maybe you achieve the best of both worlds by pruning that way.
Yeah, okay. And certainly this is a good time to be doing it. I have this dogwood in my front yard. It's been there for a number of years, and every year I say to myself, well, it really needs to have a little pruning done, and I know – probably the best time to do that is before it leaves out so you can actually see all the branches and stuff. Do I ever do it? No. It gets to the point, it blooms, it gets the leaf on it, and I say, well, maybe next spring I'll do that. So you make yourself a little note, now is the time to be doing it when you can actually see the shape of the tree, see where the branches are, see how they're going, so you can, it's easy to see if you have branches that are crossing, and just, now's the time to do it.
It's a perfect time. And from a health standpoint, it's also good, too, because the tree is still dormant, and so if you make the cut, it's not necessarily going to push new growth out yet. As opposed to, for example, if you tried to make that cut in late fall, where, it still may be trying to go into dormancy, but it may be not totally in dormancy, and it sends out new growth, and then that ends up dying off from the cold weather and potentially opening up that tree to little disease issues. So I think now is ideally the time to do that.
We have some callers here. Let's talk with them. And our first is in Longview, Illinois, line number 4. Hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about evergreens. I have about 15 evergreens. They're fairly old, about 30 to 40 feet tall, and I'm worried about losing them to wind. Some of the roots are starting to pop up in high winds, and I'm worried about losing them. I didn't know if it was safe to top them or what I might do to sort of ensure that they're not going to get blown over, or at least keep them as long as I can.
Yeah. I mean, you can take the top out of it. It's going to send up a new lead again. But it's going to be a recurring problem. And they're pretty... How tall are they now?
Well, they're anywhere from 30 to 40 feet.
Mm.
So are they actually leaning, which makes you think that they're going to come out of the ground, or you're just seeing some roots at the surface?
Last year, they were blowing in the wind, and last year I've seen them leaning, and at one point one of them had a big lump of root came up, and it really it disturbed the earth. It was a big lump, and then it went back down, but it was just told me that it was about to come out.
Well, now this could be an issue that has been actually occurring over a period of time. I don't know your conditions up there over the past 5 years, but have you had a period of pretty dry weather over the last few summers? Not counting
pretty
the last
wet.
One. Pretty wet. But
last few years it's
last
been
few
wet.
Years pretty wet.
Yeah.
One of the conditions that may be causing this problem, because first of all, those trees, you know, if they're healthy, they should have a root mass such that those trees aren't going to blow over under normal conditions, short of a hurricane or tornado. So it tells me that potentially there's some root issues going on from either maybe some dry conditions several years back, and the roots started to atrophy. Or that it could be excessively wet, in which case some of those roots are dying, that some of those anchor roots. So I wonder if we shouldn't be addressing the problem at the ground level rather at the top, because, like I said before, if you cut it back now, it's only going to stimulate growth, and it's going to put out a new lead, and we're going to be dealing with this problem all over again in a matter of time. So I wonder if maybe we shouldn't be looking around the soil area where the root zone is and seeing whether we can determine whether it seems extra dry or extra wet, and then approach it from that basis. What do you think, Sandy?
Yeah, I wonder about that, too, because really a 30 to 40-foot tree, as you said, should have root systems that will tolerate our winds around here. If you're seeing, other things going on where it's actually, as you say, whether it's leaning or whatever, then I'm with you. I think there's been some root damage somewhere along the line, either because it's too wet or too dry. So I think there's some of that going on, and I don't think any kind of topping is going to help that kind of thing.
Yeah, and maybe you can improve the drainage to the soil there, or dig down a little bit and try to do some investigation. Maybe a county extension agent can come out and take, I don't know if they have the time to do that where you live, and actually take a look at that. But that's where I would put my focus and see if we can assess the problem there and make some improvements at the ground level and give those roots a better chance to anchor in.
Very good. That's good information. One last question on when you cut a limb off and you're trimming a tree, is there some, if it's a big limb, what do you recommend putting on the spot that's cut?
Nothing. Nature, that's a great question, by the way. And a lot of people think that they need to put the pruning paint on after they make the cut. But the Mother Nature is the best healer of any type of situation like that, especially with a clean cut. There's a right way to make a cut, and there's a wrong way. And I have information on my website if you want to know, and there's other places where you can certainly get it. But once the cut is made, and assuming that it's a clean cut, let nature seal that up itself. It'll basically seal itself over. But if you were inclined to put like a pruning paint on it, for example, sort of that black paint, actually that can make the situation worse, because you actually seal in potential moisture or problems. And nature has a better way of dealing with that, and so you should just let nature take its course, and you'll be better off.
Thank you very much.
Okay, well, thanks. I think it's probably one of the most important things you can do is when you cut it, you have to make sure that you cut it in a way so that if it gets wet, like if it's raining, that's gonna drain off.
Yeah.
And you don't want any way that it will collect and hold moisture, because that's definitely gonna get you ahead in the direction of a problem.
And water is a big vector of plant disease. So anytime you can help the plant shed water or keep the leaves dry, you want to do that. And in regards to the pruning cut on a limb, just one quick word of advice. If you are making a cut like that, do not cut from the top down all the way through is your soul cut. Just quickly, so people can grasp the concept here. If you were to do that, as you're cutting down from the top to the bottom, eventually the weight of the branch is going to cause that cut to break away. But with it, it's going to take a lot of bark. Since you haven't made the cut all the way through yet, as that branch falls away, it's pulling with it extra bark that's in front of the cut. In other words, closer to the trunk. And now we've got a big problem because we just removed the protective layer of the tree and exposed it to all kinds of potential future problems. So what you want to do is, between the trunk and the place that you want to make the ultimate cut, make an undercut first. Just cut up about a third of the distance. And then go out another 6 inches or 12 inches beyond that and make your cut all the way through. So as the weight of the branch starts to break away, and it will, it'll break away only to the point where you made that undercut, and then you'll have a clean break and you won't tear away any of that excess bark. Then you come in and make your final cut against the trunk right at the collar where it kind of starts to flare out, and that's the perfect cut.
Okay, well, that's a great piece of advice, and I'm sure that that's what most people, unless they have thought about it or know what they're doing, they're just going to go right out there and they're going to start at the top. They're just going to saw it down.
Well, it's true, and we all do that. You know, that's very common for us to all make that, and we learn from our mistakes, which is how Sandy and I both have probably learned the 5 or 10 biggest mistakes we've ever made. So, yeah, you learn by doing, and hopefully you only make that mistake once.
All right. Let's go on to another caller. Belgium, line one. Hello.
Hello, and good morning to you all.
Good morning.
I have a couple little points to make and question to ask Ms. Mason. Number one, about the trees. Pollarding does have a use in some places, and you'll see it a lot in San Francisco. You see it in other large cities. They'll take, and trees will get large, and they'll pollard the top of them so that they still have shade trees in an urban area. And you see it a lot in San Francisco all over. And they have tree crews that come around and pollard them every few years.
But
also, another use for pollarding is in a tree called, and I'm probably going to mispronounce this, I think it's called Paulina. It's a tree that is used in Japan a lot, and it's very, very desired lumber. And it doesn't really grow in central Illinois so much, but you get to southern Illinois and Kentucky and down that area down there, it can be a very, very, very valuable tree, especially if you get an old one. And I wanted to point out that so pollarding does have its effect and uses in certain areas and certain spots, and it does really beautify a place where there can't be trees very easily, especially large trees in a large city. Just doesn't work at all.
But too many things. Yeah, but I will say pollarding is different than topping.
Pollarding
is done on a young tree, and it's done year after year on a young tree. So you don't end up with these huge wounds like you do on topping. So it's definitely, I don't want people to confuse pollarding with topping because they are absolutely different things. Topping is normally done on a mature tree, large wounds, not a good thing. Pollarding is done is a process where every year you come in. Actually, we pollard a tree out at our idea garden. We have a yellow catalpa tree, and every year since it's been out there, we've pollard it. And it is absolutely, it's a great way to keep a large tree small, but it is a definite different process than topping.
Yes,
so
absolutely right.
As long as we realize that.
The other question, which is not going to involve the other guest, but going to involve Ms. Mason. I have a friend who enjoys growing raspberries, and he buys these raspberries from various suppliers and plants them in his yards, and he starts getting raspberries in June, and they go until the frost, and they just get these red things, and he's real, real proud of them. They're big and everything, but they really don't have the flavor of the black raspberry that I go out and pick regularly for the jelly that my wife makes. They just don't seem to have the flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a type of cultivar that has the real strong flavor that the wild raspberries have?
Well, I think, you know, any cultivar, when you get differences like that, you're going to have different flavors. And I think black raspberries always have a different flavor than red raspberries do,
uh-huh.
which is kind of what you're talking about. And certainly if they're growing it when it's really moist and they're really putting on a lot of fruit, sometimes it kind of weakens. You don't get that intense flavor some years that you do in other years. So I'm not sure I can tell you there's an exact one that replicates what you see in the wild. And maybe Joe knows of one, but I don't really know one that I can tell you that is going to replicate those wild varieties that we typically think
of.
I'm
racking my brain as we...
Yeah, I can't really think of anything where I've heard somebody say, yeah, that's just like the wild ones.
Okay. Well, I know the other ones sure produce a lot, but and they're beautiful
right.
berries, but they just lack that flavor.
Yeah, those probably an Everbearer like Heritage or one of those is
something
probably
like
what they have.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
All right,
sure.
Thank you. We have some other calls here. We'll get on to you just in a moment here. We're at our midpoint, and I want to introduce again the guests. Here in studio with me, Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County, and once a month she is on the program to talk about lawn and garden care. And also joining us by telephone as a special guest is Joe Lample. He's somebody who has been involved in gardening and garden education for a long time. He's a master gardener, designer, certified landscape professional. He's also a syndicated columnist, and he's on television and on radio. His most recent book is The Green Gardener's Guide. He's the host of a program on the DIY Network, which is called Fresh from the Garden. And he will be a special guest for the spring Garden Day, for Garden Day 2010. This is March 26 and 27, and it's happening here in our area. And he will be here and talking about the five biggest mistakes we make in our home landscape. And there'll be a lot of other stuff going on, too. And if people are interested in finding out more about this, best way to go is to probably contact the local, whoever your local extension office is, or here it would be Sandy, or you can go on the web. I'm sure.
Yeah, actually, go to the Champaign County Extension's website. You can go there and you can actually register online, or you can give us a call at 217-333-7672.
And I read, Joe, somewhere that am I right that you're developing a program or have developed a program that's going to be on public television?
Yes, you are. Thank you for asking. I was hoping I had a chance to mention that. Debuting May 15th across the country in most major markets. And, you know, I have a list here, but it's not in alphabetical order, so it's hard for me to know whether your local station is going to have it. But it is it's a national PBS show, and it's going to be called, it is called Growing a Greener World. And so it is a show all about gardening. It's rooted in gardening, but it's even bigger than that. It's about people, places, and organizations doing great things for the planet as it relates to gardening. So we've got some unbelievably great stories. We've already completed five episodes in, from Florida to Michigan out west, and we're going all over the place to create 26 new episodes this year alone about stories that fit that description. So I'm so excited about it, and the reception or the receptivity of the member stations across the country for public broadcasting has been overwhelmingly positive.
Okay. Well, we got a number of other callers. Let's get back to them and talk next with somebody in Mattoon on line three. Hello. I think at line three, Mattoon. Okay. How about we go to Effingham, line four. Hello.
Hi. I have a flowering crab tree. I think it's called a prairie fire. And it's the trunk is blistering, it's kind of splitting, and different limbs are splitting, and it only occurs on one side of the tree. And I have actually two trees, and they both did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure what I can do about it. And if it's, someone said it was like a sun scalding or something like that, and I'm not sure what it is.
Winter burn or sun scald was going to be my guess. Is it on the... Well, I guess
it's on the north side of the house, and so it gets direct sun from the west,
mm-hmm.
and it gets morning sun from the east for part of the morning.
What side is the damage on? Is the damage, you said two of your trees have this problem?
Yeah, it's on the west side.
Yeah, okay. Well, then that tells me sun scald or wind damage or both, and those trees are very susceptible to that as well. Some people will put a... some people will paint their trunks white. Now, that to me is not all that aesthetic, but it helps reflect some of the heat, some of the sunlight, and potentially reduces that potential problem. Potential. Huh.
But that causes it to split. Is that
yes? Yes, it can. And see, the other thing about trees like this and this family, between the change in temperatures, the rapid change in temperatures from warm to cold, back to warm, and the fluctuations don't bode very well for the bark on these trees, and it's very common to get splitting, and especially on the west side or where it's most exposed to the sun or the wind or both. And so that, to me, when you early in your conversation, that was my I was going to wait for you to finish, but that was what I was already thinking.
So how do the trees look? I mean, when they leaf out, do they leaf out fine and look good?
Well, one is doing poorly, and The other one is doing great, and I've pruned it. I've already pruned it, took about a third of the limbs off and branches off, and so it has nice shape and everything, and it's growing well, and it produces a lot of berries and or crab apples, and so it looks good, but I'm concerned because of the splitting. It's not just in one spot. As soon as the branches get some size to them, they start to split.
Yeah, that's unfortunately, that's a hard one to solve. Once that happens, you just sort of, it's a Pandora's box. I know that's not the answer that you're looking for, but once you expose that tree to, you know, the air and to the elements,
No painting or wrapping or anything like that. It's not really going to make any difference.
Well, it's not going to heal what damage has already occurred, but it could prevent future problems. The wrapping or the painting definitely could reflect some of that heat. And that's typically the source of the problem.
Now I'm thinking about moving the trees, so having someone with the trees, because they're really beautiful trees. Getting someone with a tree spade to move them, so they should be in a location that is out of direct sun, or they should be.
Well, if you could shield the branch or the main trunk from the direct sun, the western sun, I think that would alleviate the problem. And if you can have it dug up big enough so that you don't put the tree under stress, you might be okay. But transplanting can create another set of problems, but it sounds like you've thought through it and you're going to get the right equipment to do the job.
Yeah. So just keep it out of that. Is it like an understory tree? Is it supposed to be more in the shade, or is it not supposed to be in direct sun? Or?
No, not necessarily. I mean, for it to bloom like it does, it loves to be out in the sun. It's just that the nature of the bark is such that it's a little bit soft and it tends to open itself up when it has temperature fluctuations in exposure to western sun, direct exposure.
Okay.
So really, at this point, probably your best bet is just good maintenance. You know, water during drought periods. You know, hopefully it's mulched with a light, like wood chip or some sort of organic mulch, 2 to 3 inches, not next to the trunk, those kind of things. And usually with those kinds of things, if you can get it so it's growing well, you know, the tree will do what it needs to do. But unfortunately, once they have those cracks, there really isn't a whole lot you can do, obviously, to repair those. It just, the tree has to do what it needs to do.
All right, and I have one quick other question. In terms of mulching, some people are using kind of a thicker mulch, more like a wood chip, like for around foundations and stuff like that. And I heard that the bigger wood chips have a kind of acid that is not good for the plant, for plants, and that you need more of a bark mulch. Can you shed any light on that?
I can. I don't want to dominate the conversation, but Sandy?
Yeah, actually, the wood chip mulches are fine. I'm not sure. I think there's a lot of misconception about, especially like pine bark mulch and stuff, that somehow it's more acidic or whatever. So I think there's a little misconception about those kinds of things. So wood chip mulches are fine. It's one of those things that generally the smaller sort of, actually the some of the best mulch for trees especially is a combination of mulch. In other words, it has some larger pieces and then some smaller pieces, almost like what you would think of that would be in a forested situation. You don't want it too thick, shouldn't be more than 2 to 3 inches, should never touch the trunk. Those kinds of things are fine. If you want to put it next to the foundation, I'd probably bring it away from the foundation a little bit, maybe a foot or so, simply because you'll get, you know, if you put it right next to the foundation, you can certainly encourage things like roly-polies and all these other sort of nuisance insects and pests that sometimes we can get indoors. So, you know, sometimes it's nice to pull it away. But
and this is also true for perennials. I can use this for perennials also?
Sure. Any of those is fine. Our local landscape recycling center has some great mulch there at Urbana, and I'm sure in your area you probably have someone that also has a local landscape recycling center where you can get local mulch.
Well, I have quite a bit of timber on my on my property, and I was thinking about getting a wood chipper and just making my own mulch. I mean, is that something I could do?
Yeah, it is. You know, the concern that some people will raise when you're just you're putting freshly chipped mulch onto your beds is that there's going to be nitrogen depletion from the soil as the mulch tries to break itself down. And although there's some truth to that, that's overblown as well. And it's just not, I've not found personally that it's just that big of an issue. And I think the consensus now with the professionals is that, you know, although there's a little bit or a slight amount of nitrogen depletion from the soil as it does break down, it's just not enough to create a problem. So I think one of the best things that you can do is keep that raw material on your property, especially if you have a lot of trees, because mulch is, to me, one of the best things that you can put in your beds. And as Sandy's already said, not too thick and not right up against the trunks. But other than that, it's doing so many things. You know, it's moderating soil temperature. It's reducing the amount of weed germination. It's helped reducing diseases on your plants that could come from the soil. And it looks good. So there's a number of reasons, and I think that you ought to use as much mulch as you can from your own property.
Okay, just to be clear, I can use this. I can rent a wood chipper, and I can use it in my garden. I can use it in my perennial beds. I can use it around my trees, and I don't have anything to worry about. Just don't put it on too thick.
Right, not too thick. And again, I mean, under the perfect scenario, it would be great if you could allow that mulch to compost on its own for a little while, where it's not right up against newly planted shrubs or perennials. For that issue I made a minute ago.
So maybe do the chipping in the fall or in the winter and
let it
for a while.
That would be great. That would be great. That would be the best of all worlds.
Okay, great.
All right, very good. Thank you. We'll keep on going here, and we will talk next with someone in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have a question about planting flowers on top of cut tree stumps. I have two tree stumps in my yard, and I wondered about how would I go about doing that if I wanted to have some flowers on those stumps.
So the stumps are sticking out of the ground, and then you're going to plant into them?
Yeah, that's like, you know, they're like about a foot high.
You want that one, Sandy?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I think probably the biggest thing is what you notice, obviously. I don't know if you're thinking about doing annuals or perennials or what you were planning on doing. And it sounds like you're trying to incorporate maybe the stump into sort of the whole landscape idea, which is fine. I think what you're going to find is you're going to have to dig out. I don't know if these were dead trees or whatever, but somewhere along the line, you're going to have to make sure that there's somewhere where you can add some soil to that, to part of that stump. And usually with a dead tree, you can usually do a pretty good job. But what you'll find is that as the stump obviously ages and decomposes, everything is going to sort of settle, kind of like we all do. We sort of just settle, right? So you'll find that it changes over time. So I don't know whether you want to add annuals or perennials or whatever, but it certainly could be sort of a natural way to sort of deal with stumps and sort of add to it. But just to realize it's certainly going to evolve over time.
Or would it be better to just put a shallow planter on top and not worry about permanently installing them or planting them?
I kind of like the idea of planting into the stump if you've got an area that's bowled out enough. My caveat was going to be to make sure that if it is a newly cut tree that there's a way for any water to drain out, because if you create a bowl effect and it holds too much water from the sap and the sort of the ceiling there, you could end up sort of drowning out your annuals or perennials, and you don't want to do that either.
Very good. Thank you very much.
And let's go to another caller, and this would be somebody in Champaign, and line two. Hello.
Line two?
Yes.
Yes, I have three rhododendron that were planted about in 1965 or earlier, and they have spread, so they cover the greater portion of my across my house, and so they have grown now so tall that they're hiding the front door, and they are hiding a couple of windows, and so I have asked somebody to prune these three plants, and I wondered if you had any particular suggestions as how to do it. I think this man has knowledge so that he will do it properly, but I wanted to see what you might have to say.
I would like to add one thing there. Fortunately, in this case, this is a situation where the guy doesn't really even need a lot of knowledge if he wants to hack them back, and rarely hear me say this.
Oh, he's not going to hack.
Okay, good.
Not at all.
But the reason I tell you that is that some of the most beautiful rhodies I've ever seen, the stand that just will take your breath away, the way they got the way they did was they were bush hogged to the ground several years in a row, and they would just naturally grow back because they were so happy where they were planted and because they respond so well to cuts, they were never harmed. Now, that's not to say you should do that ever. In fact, anytime you cut back more than a third of any plant, you subjected to extra stress. And so thankfully for you, rhododendrons are one of those plants that if they are well established in the ground and happy, they'll respond very well to pruning. So in your case, I wouldn't worry a whole lot at all.
Mm-hmm. All right. Very good.
And do it, by the way, the timing of the cut.
Well, I know I'm going to lose a lot of blooms, but I think this is the time to do it.
It's actually not quite the time to do it. You want to cut them right after they bloom so that they have a chance to form new blooms before next year. If you cut them now, you're going to lose all your color for the season.
I see.
But if you're okay with that, it's okay to cut them now. You just have to understand you're going to sacrifice your color for the season.
Well, yes. Now they bloom about the 15th of May.
Okay. Or maybe you do some sequential pruning. Maybe you cut back some of it that's bothering you for the overgrowth issue, and leave some so you have the wonderful flowers, and then you come back June 1st or June 15th and cut the rest, and you should be good for next year.
I see. All right. Well, thank you.
All right. Very good. Much. We have about 10 minutes left, maybe a little less in this part of Focus. Sandy Mason's here with us. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's on the program once a month. It's always the Tuesday. We talk about things that grow in the home landscape. And our special guest is Joe Lample. He's a Master Gardener, Certified Landscape Professional. His most recent book is The Green Gardener's Guide. He is the host of Fresh from the Garden on the DIY Network, and will be hosting an upcoming show that many public TV stations will air called Growing a Greener World. And he's going to be special guest for the Garden Day 2010 coming up here in Champaign the end of the month. More information on that, you go to the U of I Extension website, and you can find out more about it. Questions here are welcome, too. We'll try to take as many as we can. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, and email will-talk@illinois.edu. Real quick, I want to get an email in here. We have somebody who has a rabbit problem. Sandy and I have also talked.
David can handle this.
Buckshot. That's my prescription. Rabbits are eating their big 5-year-old viburnum carlesi. How can I protect them next winter? They say.
Wow.
Big cage.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's about your best bet, and especially in the wintertime. I found that there's certain plants that they always pick on in the wintertime, especially if we get a certain amount of snow cover. So I think, especially when they're young, what I have found, they picked on my viburnums like crazy the first like 2 or 3 years, and I just put cages around them, and I usually put 3-foot-tall fences, basically, around them. And then after about that third or fourth year, they pretty much left them alone, and the plants were big enough that even if they damaged them a little bit, it wasn't a big deal. So unfortunately, I don't know, unless Joe knows, I don't know of any repellent that is just 100% going to work for you, because if they're hungry enough, they're going to eat through repellents. So.
Well, they are, but I have to say repellents have come a long way in recent years. Liquid Fence has a good one, and there's others. But there have been a lot of studies as to what works and what doesn't, and I think these companies have finally figured it out. But as Sandy said, no repellent is 100% effective forever, and eventually with rain and time, they become less effective, and the rabbits will get used to it, and ultimately, like you said, Sandy, if they're hungry enough, nothing's going to stop them short of a physical barrier, and that goes back to your recommendation, which I concur with. That's obviously the best way to do it.
Okay. On to another caller. Let's talk with somebody in Urbana, line 3. Hello.
Hi. Yeah, actually, I've got, first of all, a soil question, and then follow up with kind of a tree question after that. I started a garden last year, and the ground is it's heavy clay. It was fill that was brought in, and it's black and seems to be productive, but it's very heavy clay. In some places, it's not very productive. So I really need to do something to loosen the ground up, and also I wanted to find out about soil testing.
Mm-hmm. Sandy, you want to take
part
of that?
Well, I would say compost, and then some more compost.
Yeah.
I mean, usually that's your best bet to try to loosen up soil, because it sounds like if it's black soil, you've got a certain amount of organic matter in it already.
Yeah.
I just have a feeling it's probably been abused soil, as in it actually got worked when it was too wet, and so it ends up being really clumpy. And so sometimes that gets to be hard, and it might feel a little sticky, like maybe you do have a certain amount of clay in it. But it sounds like overall it's probably halfway decent soil. So I think adding some compost is going to help. Don't work the soil when it's too wet. Those kind of things are good. Soil testing you certainly can do, and I would just check. I'm not sure, again, what area you were in, but I know in our area there's a agricultural soil management.
It's Urbana.
You're in Urbana, okay. Illini FS does soil testing out on University, and then also on North Mattis, Agricultural Soil Management also does soil testing. And you just want to get a composite of the area. So I would probably do this before you put your compost down, but go ahead and get a compost, a composite of all the different areas maybe that you have. Maybe mix that together if you feel pretty comfortable that most of them are similar, and then get your final sample from that. So in other words, don't just take it from one single area and then take that in. And usually they only need about a half a cup to a cup of soil.
Yeah. Okay, then I've got a tree question too. There's a pin oak, a big pin oak, which is unfortunately on the south end of this plot. But one thing I noticed last year was, and particularly I'd planted some early lettuce, and pin oaks, when they start to bloom, they have these little threads that come down and blow all over the place and so forth. And it seemed like those were that may have been toxic to the lettuce, because some of that early lettuce just turned brown and shriveled up and died. And then later on, after those threads were gone or leached out or whatever, then I got some better results with lettuce in that same area.
Those are probably the male flowers. That's where the pollen's coming from, and then all those drop. And I wonder, I've never heard of them, unless Joe's heard of it, I've never heard of those being toxic. Certainly they can be so plentiful that they'll just smother things out. I mean, I could see that happening where there's just so much of it, it kind of almost smothers them. And you might end up with some disease problems because it's so smothered. But I've never heard of those being toxic.
You know, my only thinking was that the acidic nature of oak leaves and oak components may have thrown that pH off. And on a young seedling, like lettuce, it's going to be a little more sensitive to the soil chemistry. And so that could have been enough to throw it off such that they just couldn't make it under the conditions. It's just a hunch. I can't say that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you.
All right, and let's go and get at least one more caller. Hopefully we get a couple. We'll go next to Champagne Line 1. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
I've got two quick questions.
Okay.
First, I have a sour cherry about 13 feet I'd like to transplant. I'd like to know when to do that. Second, I've got some arborvitaes I put in as a hedge, and they're about 12, 13 feet now. Thought about cutting them back about 15 feet. What's a good time to do that?
Well, certainly this is a good time to be moving plants. If you do want to do some transplanting, this is going, you know, March through April is usually a pretty good time for us. If you can get in there when it's not too terribly wet like it is now, that's going to be the issue for you. And then you said for the arborvitae, you want to actually cut them back?
Yes.
Was that your comment?
I want to top them off as a hedge.
As they're just getting too tall for you?
They can't, where they're at, they can't get too tall. That's the problem. They've got about 2-3 more feet I can do.
Yeah. It's hard. Now, are these, I assume these are the upright arborvitaes?
Yes, they are.
Yeah. Probably the biggest thing is just trying to maintain some sort of shape with those. And so
right.
I'm not sure, you know, I wouldn't use like hedge trimmers or anything on them. I try to go in there and actually usually you can sort of follow the branch down and then cut it to the next, where there's another branch coming out. Does that make sense? So you're trying to maintain the natural shape. So it takes you longer, obviously, than doing a hedge trimmer. But just try and maintain the natural shape, and then don't cut into where there's no green stuff, because arborvitaes are one of those that just doesn't leaf out well in the brown area.
Right.
So you don't want to cut them back too much where you're actually into the brown area, and it's then you may end up with gaps.
What's a good time of the season to do that, though?
You could certainly do that now.
Okay. Sounds great. Thank
sure.
you much.
Okay.
Go
and
for it.
Let's do Oak Forest, line 4. Hello.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I've got two crabapple trees in my backyard, about 12 and 15 feet tall. I've never trimmed the branches. They seem to be growing like somebody's fingernails. Where am I going to start trimming? How far do I go on trimming and cleaning all that up?
So you want to just reduce the size of the branches?
You know, the branches just kept on growing. The smaller branches grew, and everything's like growing into each other, and it's like... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that's exactly what you want to try to eliminate. And so I would follow those branches. You know, you identify the branch that you think is in competition or growing into the other that you want to remove. And here's a tip, by the way. If you're not sure whether you want to cut that branch or not, maybe put a ribbon around it or, you know, a little piece of nylon tape and just sort of study it for a day or two before you make the cut, because obviously once you do, it's irreversible. But once you decide on the branch, take it back to the point that it connects to another branch, and you want to cut it there, and you want to cut it so that there's a little bit of a collar. You don't want to cut too deeply into that parent branch, and that's where you make the cut if it's if you're totally removing the branch. Now, if you're just reducing it in size, go back, if you can, no more than a third, and cut it back to a point where you see a bud, some sort of indication that there's a new branch that will form. And make your cut about a quarter to on a tree, probably about a half an inch above that bud. And that's where I would make the cut. And make sure that you do it as cleanly as possible. Loppers are great.
I'm going to have to jump in here. I kind of have to apologize to the caller and to somebody else we can't take because we're here at the end. We're going to have to stop. Next month, Sandy will be back. We'll do this with her every month. Mm-hmm. If you're here in and around Champaign-Urbana, we have a show on WILL-TV that's called Illinois Gardener, Thursday nights at 7. It's a live show. They answer questions. And if you would like to register for the Garden Day 2010, find out more about that, go to the Extension website, www.extension.uiuc.edu/Champaign, and you can find out about the schedule, about the events, and find out about our guest, our special guest here, Joe Lample. He'll be here as a guest for the Garden Day. Joe, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
And Sandy, hey, thank you for being
thank
here.
Thank you. And I learned something today. I didn't realize you could hack back rhododendrons. I've always been so timid. So thank you, Joe. Now I know that you can hack back rhododendrons and they still live. That's
all
great.
All right. Well, we got to go there.